temptation in general is generally going against social norms. So it is not normal for a younger man to be attracted to an older woman.
And we're certainly not there yet, even in the plot.
Right. Spoilers ahead for every movie we ever do.
The title is called Harold and Maude. You knew we were getting there eventually. Jeez. Turn down the volume. The people in the car next to you don't know why you're screaming. Plotters, thanks for joining us again.
This is Shocked and Applaud with Lydia Malcolm,
Naomi McQuaid,
and Jen McQuaid.
Thank you for joining us. This must be March.
Yeah, because we just reviewed Harold and Maude.
Well, having had reviewed it for you now, but for us, it's just starting.
Yeah.
Okay, wait. At some point, guys, we're going to start, like, writing down an intro or, like, having a formula for it.
Why script now? I mean, we're, like, three seasons in.
So better than improving the product given to our plotters, we're like, what? It's a proven formula. We've got over 1,000 downloads. Just... Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, obviously people are liking it.
Yeah. Look, that's more than a classroom. That's more than... We have nearly my graduating class worth of listenership.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sorry.
So, like I said, we're reviewing Harold and Maude, which, listeners, if you have never seen, this is a great film. I just want to say that. Put it out there.
Well, it's a cult film, which means it either hits you square in the yes button or it hits you square in the no button.
That is a great way to define a cult film.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, I mean, either you're like, oh, every one of the feels, or you're like, I don't want to feel any of this. Mm-hmm. Which is basically how therapy works, which is basically our podcast.
Yeah, our podcast is our therapy.
It's our therapy, guys.
Nice. So what is your background on this film?
Well, I like what my friends and I define as fine films, which is just films that might be off of the normally beaten path. I mean, they tend to be older or obscure or culty. This one definitely falls in the culty land, and so it was on a lot of lists. I'd be like, oh, yeah, I like B-movies and cult films, and people are like, have you seen Harold and Maude? And I would say, no. And then as modern technology has come, it showed up in some feed of mine, and I was like, you know what? I should really watch Harold and Maude. And when I watched it, I was like, this is all the things that, I mean, I am a person who cannot stand a chick flick, and this is as close as I get to, this is near perfection for me in terms of a romantic dalliance of cinema.
That's great. I don't really know anything. I didn't really know anything about this film outside of the basic plot. And I hadn't seen it. And maybe some, like, you know, maybe like one obscure YouTuber had mentioned it in the videos he does. And I was just like, oh, okay, I should watch that movie at some point. And then I just never did until we started the podcast, and we did it for the podcast. And I love this podcast because we get to go ahead and watch really weird movies.
Yeah, it's my birthday month for March. And so when I kind of got to pick, so like, I was like, okay, what would be great for all of us? And Harold and Maude is definitely it.
And I'm in the same camp as you. I don't really like, you know, rom-coms all too much.
Which is ironic because by all accounts that I've read recently, and mind you, I've done all of my research very, very recently, this fits the rom-com formula.
Mm-hmm.
It just does it in a way that is pleasing.
Yeah. Well, most romantic comedies, they kind of pit, like, there's like this love triangle and someone ultimately gets their heart broken.
Mm-hmm. Or somebody's a douchebag, but then they explain it away in a way that's like, okay, there is a bit of that. But it's not formulaic in a very like Aniston-esque sort of way. Not that I disparage anybody's love for Aniston. Mm-hmm. I just, guy meets girl, guy's a douchebag, and then he stops being a douchebag just long enough to win the girl. Or girl is like conflicted and has a hard job, so she can't possibly find romance, or throw some Hallmark in it. She went home for the holidays, but her high-powered job in the city is making it so she can't marry tree chopper guy who's really close with the fam.
Does anybody in this movie even have a high-powered job?
No, they're just moneyed or don't care.
Yeah.
And that's convenient.
Yeah.
I'll take a little bit of convenience because the rest of the plot is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Should we get into the plot then?
Okay, so Jen, did you have any backstory for knowing this film?
I think that I saw it originally on Netflix with you.
And like it's years ago.
Yeah, and it's on Amazon Prime right now.
For free. If you've already got Prime, go to it, people.
Technically, that's not free, but yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, unlimited.
Okay,
there we go. Just watch it on repeat.
Yeah.
Get that money to them peoples from 1971. Mm-hmm.
Royalty checks.
I wonder how much a Harold and Maude royalty check would be. Like, every, like, I mean, because, like, Bud Colt is probably still alive, I think. I saw him on the internets, and he's like, every once in a while he gets a check for $12.50, and he's like, huh. I get more from the aquatic life of that rest of the title I can't remember. Okay. So let's do as you say and launch into the plot, because I mean you don't need a lot of, if you get too much lead into a cult film, then you don't freaking get it. Yeah. Because when I was like, Harold and Maude, it's a rom-com I can like. Lydia, let's do it. And she's all cool. And then cut to Lydia in her apartment staring at the screen, ready to take notes, when all of a sudden
I can't take notes at all, because the first scene, the opening scene, is just like, has me in my tracks, just stopped, and I can't do anything.
No.
And I just watched the film, and like, this was a ride that I enjoyed.
It's kind of like the emotional equivalent of looking into a kaleidoscope. Mm. So you're like, oh, I get what's going on. There's some greens, there's some blues, there's some light. It's very pretty. Oh my God, there's some chartreuse and some yellow, and what's that orange doing over there? Okay, now we're, hold on a second.
Yeah, kaleidoscope is very apropos for this.
Thank you. So we're walking. Okay, it cuts to the top of a darkened staircase. Mm-hmm. Very shadowy. No titles to mention at all at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So we see a pair of beautiful suede shoes walking down. Well, they're leather shoes, dress shoes, walking down a set of darkened.
And it's pretty much a man walking through an entire room.
Mm-hmm. It's fancy. And he walks across. From being a POV of just the shoes walking across this fancy room, you're like, oh, these people are moneyed. These people got some paper to throw around, you know?
So I know it's been a few months since the movie came out, but did you see Jojo Rabbit?
Oh, yes, we did. On your recommendation. Lydia, on your recommendation.
It was a really good movie, right?
It was nothing like the previews prepared me for. And then when you described it, I was like, that doesn't make any sense. And then by the end of the film, like, I've been up and down so much that I couldn't, I mean, I turned to Lydia, I turned to Jen, and I'm like, what was that? And Jen was like, how would you, as a person making a preview or a person describing it to a friend, make that simple enough to explain plot? And I was like, couldn't do it.
No. I mean, really, you just, anyways, it was mostly because Scarlett Johansson is the mom, she has shoes, and those, like, it's kind of like an important point of the movie.
Mm-hmm. If
and
you don't recognize those shoes, you won't get it.
Right.
But now, these shoes don't play throughout the entire film, but you're watching a lot of context coming into play.
Right.
That just sets the tone for the entire film, because you're cutting from these very beautifully shot but important images. It's not necessarily a dialogue. It's not necessarily even the plot line, but you're like, oh, a rich person who's, mm-hmm. okay, being very calm and meticulous as they walk across the floor and then sit down. And what is he writing? I don't know.
Yeah.
And then he creates a name tag.
Yeah. He also, like, plays music. And that's when we get the music playing. Yeah. Still,
considering the scene, the fact that he puts on a record and Cat Stevens comes out, I'm like, huh.
But he's lighting candles. And then he steps onto this step stool. And then
jumps on. Okay, he puts a name tag on.
Yeah.
He goes and he lights a candelabra.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not lose the affluence. Then he walks across the floor and he steps down onto a lower portion of the floor. And then he jumps onto a stool. And you're like, huh, what could be going on right now at the beginning of my film?
Right.
And then all of a sudden he steps off of the stool and hangs, and his feet just kind of dangle.
And that's when you know he has just...
He's hung himself.
He's
hung himself. Yeah. In the first 30 seconds of the movie.
Gives you a great idea of what you're going to be in
and
for.
That's the second Lydia couldn't take notes anymore, and I completely get it.
Yeah. Because, and it follows up, like, as soon as you see his feet dangling and everything, the music stops, and we see this woman walk in to the room.
Yeah, it's a large sitting room. Now you see a full shot of the room, and he's hanging, and I will point out, and if you want to throw back already to the episode about Pet Sematary, I have a thing about hanging harnesses in films. I just notice. It's a technical thing, and you either do it really well or you suck at it. And you've got no in between. And I don't blame you for it, but I'm going to notice it and point it out on my podcast. And this is a really good one.
Yeah.
He looks like he's hanging.
Yeah.
He was a method actor too. So he was like, I felt like I was really hanging.
I know. They're really good zombie noises that he makes.
Oh, yeah. His mother comes in, looks up at him. She's in this very prim outfit, and you can tell she's like, her anus is like super tight. She's like in this, very demure plaid skirt, pinstripe skirt that matches her head wrap. She glances up at him, and then she walks over to the phone and she calls up and she's like, oh, what's his name? Could you tell Renee that I've just had such a trying day that could we move our appointment? I've guests coming over tonight. Could you just move my appointment with Renee? And then the person pauses and she's like, I suppose you think you're very amusing.
Yeah. Well, like at one point, the camera like cuts to Harold. This is Harold, by the way. The Harold of Harold and Maude.
And his mom, which is not Maude.
No.
It's just mom.
It's mom.
Except not even mom, probably mother.
Yeah.
And not even mother, like Mrs.
Chasen. They don't even give her first name. Like there's, you know, women throughout the movie that we meet and they all have like first and last names.
But not Miss Chasen.
Nope.
Nope. She keeps that stored in that anus. So she can't get anything out of.
But there are moments where the camera cuts to Harold's face and he's just like.
First he looks amused and then he's like, I've got to interrupt this phone call. And he starts going. All of, like, Walking Dead noises. And his tongue is black, guys. It's amazing. He's meticulous.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate the attention to detail.
And his face looks almost like it's been, like, given kind of like this dead.
He's definitely been powdered up. And he's got red around his eyes, which is kind of his MO. He always looks like a gaunt guy. But he specifically looks like he made an effort here to look kind of dead.
Yeah.
And she stands up and she's like, dinner at 8, Harold, and I do hope that you will be a bit more vivacious. And he's like, he's got drool, like real commitment to the bit. He's got, and it's not fake. This guy worked it. It was drool hanging down from his mouth to the top of his coat buttons.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And I wasn't even mad about it. Normally I'm like, ew, but I was like, I approve.
Yeah.
Stamp.
Yeah. And dinner is at 8 indeed, because Harold is sitting at this table with his mother talking about all these different weird things. He's just so much of a character, just like his father. And there's like all of these other adults who are around his mother's age, if not older.
Mm-hmm. He has no peers in this group, but she's the only one who speaks.
Mm-hmm.
He speaks one line, I believe, in this entire scene. And she's like, oh, his father was given to, I'm paraphrasing, but given to acts of whimsy. One time he left me at dinner and they found him floating naked down the signs.
Fun note, the song that's playing in the background via harp is Green Sleeves. The first like couple of lines is, alas, my love, you do me wrong, to cast me off discourteously. And I'm like, a bit on the nose, director, man.
But it's a lot of classical songs that I know, which means they're like super mainstream.
Yeah. But it was still like, I mean, it was pretty nice to actually get that sort of like, this is the relationship between Harold and his mother, and she's just like completely ignoring the things that he enjoys.
She's like, be an adult.
Yeah.
You cannot self-designate anything.
Right.
Make no autonomous choices.
Mm-hmm.
Do exactly what I say and be fully grown.
And eat those beets.
Right. So then he launches into eating these beets like, and then she continues to talk, right? No. First she asks him, why aren't you talking? He's like, I've got a bit of a sore throat. And she just is like, she glazes over it. She's not going to mention it in front of the guests. She's like, well, then I want you to go to, she tells him, you have to go to bed right after dinner. Because she's got this north, what did you say? East Coast, you British voice?
Northeastern
British
voice. Or...
She just sounds like this all the time from, she sounds like the chick from Keeping Up Appearances. You know I'm right. Anyway, so now he's angry eating beets because she says, eat your beets. And then it cut. This is what happens again and again in the film. They cut from scene to scene. Somebody will say something like, can you explain this? And then it just cuts to the next scene that explains the thing. Well, now it's like, eat your beets and then go straight to bed. And he's like, gong, 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 gong. And then it cuts to her, like a view out of her bedroom bathroom. And you see her walk in as if the party has ended. And she walks into a separate part where you can't see her. She takes off her wig. She comes in her wig cap and her gown and she starts walking into the bathroom. She opens the door and it is sprayed. I don't know about you, but I've eaten a lot of beets. It's one of my favorite root vegetables. The blood on the walls, it's all beets, guys. He blended up beets and I swear to you that's what it was, because I have been covered in those juices so many times.
To be fair, I think Harold would do that, because just his character throughout the entire film, it makes sense that he would, you know, go ahead and incorporate something that his mom didn't really like, told him, you do this, and then he goes ahead and is like, okay, I'll do this to the extreme.
Yeah, I have to twist the thing that you're ruining me with just to with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's okay. So she's like, oh my God. And then she's like, I can't, this is too much. I can't do this anymore. She's not like really upset. She's just kind of being melodramatic. And it cuts to him like laying sprawled in the bathtub. He's okay. Attentions to detail. He cuts up his arm. Mm-hmm. Like, you know how like the emo kids are always like, you know, not up the river, not across the stream. Like real dark when it comes to how to kill yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should share that, but they say that. And so he's got a slice from his ankle up towards his inner elbow. And it's all beats. And he's like, and then on the bottom of the tub. And she's like, ah.
Well, and here's the thing. Like, I noted that she never, like, yells at him. She never, like, is, you know, physically abusive or anything. And she doesn't even belittle him so much. She's just like, I can't take this anymore, Harold, you know? And yeah. She walks away. So she, at no point, like, imagine being a parent with this kind of a child, and like you don't know how to react, and you're like, I'm gonna smack some sense into him, because I could tell you, if I ever pulled that stunt, I'm not entirely sure that my parents would have just like walked away.
There's a difference between correction and discipline, and kids need discipline more than they need correction a lot of times. And by discipline, I don't mean like physical or emotional abuse. A kid needs to be sat down and okay, yeah, discipline can be, you need corrective behavior, this needs to be modified, but a lot of times a kid doesn't know why what they did is wrong. The caveat to this is Harold does know what he's doing wrong. Mm-hmm. But, and this I will bring up later because it's a big contention for me, he doesn't see anything from his mom's point of view. Mm-hmm. So he's like, you know, you're just being a bitch at a dinner party and you're bossing me around and it's not going to change anything. I've got these feels that I'm not dealing with. So I beats. Mm-hmm. Beats in a big deadly you.
Yeah. I do lament for the house cleaners though.
Yeah, that's not okay.
I know.
That was a real fancy bathroom. There was a lot of marble in there. House cleaner check. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I was like, not okay, unless you got a squeegee and there's a drain in the middle of the floor.
If I tried that, I would be cleaning up my mess and my parents would be like, do it again. Just out of, you know, just to make sure that it gets dug in.
This is the thing. If you have a kid, okay, if you have a kid who spreads poo on the walls, you know the number one thing that will get them to stop?
Make them clean it up?
You have to physically clean it up. And no, there are no shortcuts. Until it is clean till my satisfaction, mm-hmm. you're cleaning this wall.
Yeah.
I'm not going to abuse you. You're just going to stay in the bathroom till it's done.
Mm-hmm.
It works on two-year-olds. Mm-hmm. Because they're like, oh, I have this human thing where I don't like to touch my own poo. Yeah, it's built into you because disease is gross. And maybe you don't understand that, but you understand the taboo that's wrinkling through your body right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the only scene where his mom really reacts in anything other than sort of a blasé look away.
Well, there's a scene or two where she's shocked, but like this is the one, this is the loudest we get her. And but then he explains it later in the hookah scene why the reaction is important to him. So she got close in this scene, but it still shows this huge disconnect. She just wants an adult person now. She doesn't want the child she's obviously been neglecting mm-hmm. forever, because she'll change the situation, but she won't provide discipline or explanation or true emotional intimacy. And that's what he needs, because wait till Maude shows up.
But her reaction shots are kind of classic. I mean, it's the only thing that really makes it a bit of humor inside of these scenes, because I mean, dealing with the idea and the concept of suicide isn't really a funny thing.
Yeah, but this is attempt number 13. She's a little over it.
Yeah, but I mean, this is like, maybe it wasn't really dealt with very well in the 70s to begin with, but I don't know how you would really handle these scenes very well without a lot of backlash from the community, online community about, I don't know.
Yes, I think certainly that if this movie was released today, there would be a lot of contention about mm-hmm. like the triggers of this movie overall. But I think at the time, especially if you knew that it was fake and it had been fake so many times before, the fact that she brushes it off is just another facet of, well, not even a facet, just a point of fact about her character where she's like, what am I supposed to do about this? I'm not going to tell anybody. I'm not mm-hmm. going to work on it. She's progressive enough to get him therapy, which is pretty freaking, that was like the near cougar mommying of 1971. Like,
yeah,
she was doing the best she could considering all she knows how to be is a marble statue of a woman.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Okay.
In the end, parents just don't understand.
There's no doubt about it, Lydia. You know what we should cut to after she's like, I just don't know what to do anymore?
Therapy.
It's time for therapy, guys.
Womp womp. I put that in my notes. Like, Harold's in therapy. Womp womp.
You know what? Good for Harold. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to exactly take from his therapy sessions, but the first thing I wrote in my notes is, they have the same outfits. Lol. He's the therapist and Harold are wearing the exact same outfits. Same buttons, same tie, same shirt, same shoes, same pants. Near the same haircut, except Harold's is a little cooler because it's all swept forward a little too long.
Well, he's younger. He's cooler.
He is. Yeah, his therapist is certainly a stuffed shirt, but their outfits are on point being the same.
Mm-hmm. And it's not the only time in them either. It's not just an accidental thing.
In the three scenes I believe we have with the therapist, they are in the same outfit every single time. Except for maybe there's a fourth one, but you don't see Harold in it. You just get him talking, and you know he's not wearing that stupid suit anymore. You just feel it in your bones.
Yeah.
Where do you find your satisfaction, Harold? Eventually the therapist says.
And Harold finds his satisfaction at funerals.
Cut to
him buying a hearse.
We were trying to find a scene by scene on the internet, and we couldn't find one. And I think it's because all of the jump cuts. There's no scene exactly. It's just,
right.
And
it's just
therapy.
A series of cuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he brings the hearse back home, and his mom almost seems more frustrated about the hearse.
Yeah, so he says, I go to funerals, and then it cuts to Harold in a junkyard buying a hearse.
Yeah.
And then you see him drinking an orange soda as he drives through a car wash. And this thing, I mean, it's the same day, presumably. Mm-hmm. He goes and buys a junker hearse, and he goes through a car wash. Thing is mint. It's mint. It looks like it's been polished. Mm-hmm. I mean, all you see him is drinking a soda in there. But like, he pulls up to the funeral and
Oh, yeah, he does. He goes to a funeral outside and he notices an older woman watching the funeral and eating an apple.
Okay, so I wrote apple too, but Jen says it was an orange.
I thought I saw an orange.
Well, it's a fruit underneath a tree.
Yeah, it's a woman eating a fruit underneath a tree. Which and it's supposed to be a love story. So you
think it really has some sort of...
Temptation. She's supposed to signify temptation.
Just like Helen Bonham Carter at the cancer support meetings in Fight Club.
Oh.
Right?
Well, because they find a kind of an interest together.
Yeah.
Or they meet at
They're like, I need to encounter the macabre of life to feel alive right now.
Well, you could also say that, you know...
I'm sorry, that was Harold's side. It's not her side of that.
You could also say that it's a... temptation in general is generally going against social norms. So it is not normal for a younger man to be attracted to an older woman.
And we're certainly not there yet, even in
the
plot.
Right. Spoilers ahead for every movie we ever do.
The title is called Harold and Maude. You knew we were getting there eventually. Jeez. Turn down the volume. The people in the car next to you don't know why you're screaming.
Anyway, so...
Fourth wall breaks. We'll get to that too.
Yeah. But there's this moment where, you know, you could very easily say that it's, you know, going against society saying this thing does not work because we say it doesn't work. And that's where the temptation is.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you're talking about temptation and like the original sin and everything, but but it's still that's another way of
saying. When throughout, I mean, now we're only like, we're maybe 5-6 minutes into the film, right? He's kind of been head down going through life how he's been going through life for we don't know how long. We know he's 18, not by anything in the film, but by me Googling that. But he looks up from like this thing that he does to try to get through to the next thing. And she's eating an apple and she just gives him a little wave. And he's like, he puts his head down again. And he's like, I got to power through this because this is just what my life is right now. So then we cut to what I have titled in my notes, weird salad scolding.
Harold brings home his hearse and his mom is pissed.
What is that monstrosity in the front yard? Did you notice, though, the salad is like three very large leaves with what looks like half of an avocado?
Oh, yeah.
Stuffed with something weirdly red.
And he's looking up at her.
He's got these googly eyes.
Like, oh.
Yeah, he just looks shocked the entire time. She's like, I think you should go talk to your uncle.
He was the right-hand man to General MacArthur, which is hilarious.
Because then we cut to...
Uncle Victor, who does not have a right arm.
Yeah, he starts ranting about how great the army is and how it's going to be just the thing that Harold needs to get his life together and how he's going to be just like Nathan Hale, this famous soldier who was like, I Googled it, he was like some sort of spy and like he didn't have anything scandalous for me to share with you. But what it leads to is this sight gag where Uncle Victor walks up to this drawing of, because Nathan Hale's from like 1770 something, and he's like a great man like Nathan Hale, and then you see his left hand go up to this little string hanging over his medals on his dress uniform that he's in. Is it a dress uniform?
Yeah.
He pulls this little string. And so so normally with somebody who's an amputee, you roll up or cut off or somehow tuck the article of clothing, of the piece of the article of clothing that's not needed, like the pant leg is gone. But this is a dress uniform. So they have stuffed it, sewed the end, and have it up like the door of a DeLorean, right? And it's kind of just up against his arm. And then he pulls this little string and it... It puffs it out to a little triangle, so the sleeve of this ring hits him straight in the forehead. So he gives a little salute.
He is saluting with an empty sleeve, and he put this contraption together.
You know what? Now that you say it like that, it sounds like a metaphor. Saluting with an empty sleeve. That's the name of my Every Country America Rules cover song band name. And I'm proud to be an American because I salute with just my sleeve.
There's also a picture of Nixon in the back.
Which I was like, oh, is that funny because Nixon bad? And Jen's like, no, that was the president.
Some context here. This came out while Vietnam was going on.
Oh, yes. It's 1971. We've got a few years left. And I mean, like, I'm sure we might even speak about it, but this is all about the feels of the youth at the time about having this adult weight put on them that they did not ask for. Mm-hmm. They're like, you want me to take on the responsibility of this bullshit that is not mine? And I'm supposed to have feels about it, but again, not mine. Mm-hmm. When all I want to do is this, but that's not what you want from me because you see it as frivolous. Well, then I'm going to be all sorts of frivolous. Sorry, rant over.
There's a lot of similarities you can make in this movie that I noted was 49 years old, but there's a lot of similarities in the way that this movie is to how we are even today.
Oh, yeah. If you don't draw the line between how Harold is treated by every other adult than Maude. He's viewed a specific way by his peers, right? As this commodity. Mm-hmm. But he's viewed as a commodity by everything, everyone. And then Maude comes along and he's suddenly a full person. Gosh, I should have waited till we got there. But you can see how I almost got there. I'll get there now. If you don't draw a parallel between that and how we treat millennials now,
right?
Like, you're insane because, oh, you're like, oh, you like avocado toast and really short videos on that app on your phone. Gosh, think about your retirement fund. And like, they're like, why? You're never going to give me enough money to put in there. So right. You know what I'm going to do? Live my life and be happy. And yeah, I'm going to be a video vlogger, but that's my choice. And you made stupid choices too. How was 1971, Mom?
To be fair, we don't have the draft now, and Harold is potentially like going to get drafted because if he doesn't straighten up, he's going to get sent to the military.
He's too moneyed, though.
Yeah.
There are certain people who never get to go to the war because they can somehow get out of the obligation.
Right.
I don't know how it only happens to people with money, though, Lydia.
Probably because they have money.
Oh.
Yeah. Who would have thought?
Oh, my goodness. I guess that is not correlation. It's causation.
So Harold is pretty much like threatened to, you know, get sent off to the military.
I think it's specifically the army.
It is the army.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so then let's cut to another death scene.
Yeah. He's playing like he.
Well, it starts with the mom.
Oh, that's right.
She's turning on the radio. She's taking the towel off her head. You see her beautiful swim cap. You see him floating in the water, but like they cut to her and there's no sign of him. And then she like takes off her robe and walks delicately into the pool and begins her little weird froggy laps with her head not getting near the water.
As she passes Harold, she gives an eye roll.
And then he's okay. Hey, okay. Again, method actor. He did that so long. His eyes stopped opening because he has his eyes open in the water. And it was described on the IMDb page as heavily chlorinated. It's just staring into chemicals until his eyes swell shut.
Oh, and then he's back with a therapist, and the therapist asks him how many times he has attempted these suicides.
Yes, a rough, I don't know how many. Give me a rough estimate.
15.
15 times?
Yeah.
It's a rough estimate, yeah.
Yeah.
And all of these were for your mother's benefit?
I wouldn't say for her benefit.
Oh my God, the way Bud delivers his lines, I mean, you could tell like, I just love his delivery. Mm-hmm. Like when he has such a great cadence with how he talks to each individual person. He talks to his mom. And he's very much like, whatever you say, because this is the role you've assigned me. And with his therapist, he's like, I'm being open, honest, and direct, and slightly naive. And then with Maude later on, he gets to be fully present with his brain. Mm-hmm. And so he's just like, I'm kind of devastating. And I'm like,
yeah,
I'm not mad about it.
And then we get another jump cut to Harold's mother telling him that, you know, when you're a child, you do childish things, but now you're not a child anymore. And so you must grow up and have and fulfill your obligations and, you know, responsibilities and duties, which, I mean, they're rich, so they don't really have anything.
Yeah.
So
when he bought the hearse, she was like, you could have any car you want, which is not what I was told as a child. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
they got money. So she's like, in order to grow up, what you should do is get married. That'll grow you up because that has worked for people.
Well, it's like if your marriage is failing, you obviously have a kid.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Jump cut. Because the only way to get his mind off of married is to go to another funeral.
Right. Well, that's how he relaxes.
That's true. That's how he finds his true satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is an indoor funeral. And the guy is giving his prayers. And they say a few lines. And then it goes, he starts another prayer and he goes, "Oh, Lord." It's exactly how I felt when I was like, another scene where I hear somebody praying about something that like,
And you hear the tss, tss,
tss. It's true. Tss. And Harold turns and looks, and then he looks back. He's like, "Oh, it's that strange woman again."
And she like puts her hand up next to her face, and she like does this little wave, and then like points a finger upward. I think that's true.
That sounds right.
Yeah,
but he doesn't respond, and so she's already disrupted the service enough for the preacher to be like, "Huh?"
Yeah,
goes back to the prayer.
Yeah,
and then she like comes up behind him and is like, gets right next to his head, and let me ASMR this for you. She goes. And he turns and he's like, and she's like,
"You want some licorice?"
He's very polite. He does not speak out of turn as much as I can. I mean, until the situation really calls for it. He's never rude. He's just like, "No, thank you."
This is 1971, so the only licorice option you have is black licorice.
Oh, yeah. It looks good. It looks like it'd be chewy, but I'm not a black licoricerer.
I love black licorice. That's how I know I'm an old woman.
That's how you know you're related to my grandma. That's okay. Somebody has to be into it.
Yeah, well, like we went up to Seattle like what, a couple of months ago
to a
cat show
convention. It was a cat convention cat show, and it was amazing.
Yeah, and afterwards we grabbed some black licorice, and like your mom was like, "What is it?" They actually offer Leota the like, "Oh, do you want to try this?" And she was like, "No," and I was like, "Oh, I'll try that." And I was the one who taste tested it to know.
It was apparently very good.
It was Norwegian,
which probably licorice. Means it was a little salty, a little stronger tasting.
Yeah,
I bet.
Yeah, but it was good.
Was Cat Stevens there?
If there was not a cat named Stevens there, I don't want to live anymore. Yeah. I'm going to attempt 15 times to shock you. she mentions, this is the first time she mentioned, so she chats him through the entire the end of the funeral. Mm-hmm. And she's like, "I'm going to be 80 next week," which is the first time she mentions. She says 75 is too, or I heard this guy was 80, which is perfect because 75 is too young and 85, you're just waiting on time. So like 80 is perfect. By the way, I'm going to be 80 next week.
Mm-hmm. That's important.
Yeah.
Put a pin in that.
So the pallbearers take the casket outside, and there's a parade marching down the street. So like I don't know about you, but for a dark comedy, this was just like, wait a second, this dog and pony show that is the human funeral experience plus humans pretending to enjoy life. And I'm sorry if you are super offended that I think that marching bands in the middle of the day marching down the street for no obvious reason. Past a casket getting put into a hearse, if that doesn't smack to you of like
pomp and circumstance,
just the parade and performance of life as rote.
Yeah,
and that's probably another theme of the film. Yeah. Life as rote is not living at all,
right?
And that's the end of the podcast. So thanks, guys, for coming.
Got all the way to the end. Wow.
Oh my god,
we've only been here for 5 years.
What if that was the end of the first episode? I mean, sorry, the first part of the episode.
Well, I don't know.
That would be awful. Okay, perfect. Okay, parade passes to Truman.
So the parade passes. These pallbearers put the coffin into a hearse.
Mm-hmm.
Not Harold's, by the way.
No.
Yeah, different hearse.
That's actually parked across the street. We'll get a beauty shot of it later. But she walks over to a blue Volkswagen Bug. Shout out to Jamie's blue bastard Beetle that she's super excited she got. You better listen to the podcast. I'm going to tag you in this. Sorry.
And she she's got like this ring of keys,
mm-hmm.
and she like takes one and like opens up the door.
Casual AF.
Yeah, this is her car, obviously.
She's like, "Oh, I bet we're going to be the best of friends. I'll see you. I hope to see you around." Mm-hmm. She shuts the door and he's just kind of standing there like you do, because he just stares after her sometimes. Mm-hmm. And she goes, "Ah!" and it cuts to her window and she rolls it down and she goes, "Hey, do you dance?" And he goes, "Excuse me?" She goes, "Do you sing and dance?" He goes, "No." And she goes, "I didn't think so." Oh, she goes, "I thought not."
And then she drives off And the pastor's like, hey, that's my car.
And then Harold doesn't react. He's just like, ah.
He's like, did you know her? And I was like, no.
So then we cut to a full face shot of Harold's mom in the most fantastic hat. You have to admit, the hat is pretty amazing. It's like this swoosh number. It's like a fancy about town hat with like these really beautiful folds at the top. And she's very together. And she's like, all right, Harold, guess what we're going to do next?
We're going to fill out a form for a dating service.
A computer service, she calls it.
Oh, computers.
A computer, guys. It'll correlate all these things. We just have to fill out this survey.
Do you know what Harold would rather do?
He would rather die. So she starts filling out.
Swipe left.
So she starts filling out the questionnaire. She starts asking him questions like, I didn't prepare at all.
I'm not going to worry about the questions so much. It was like, what was it? Oh, do you think that, you know, a woman should run for president?
Why, yes, I do think so. Why not?
Do you feel that, what is it?
Should sex education be taught outside the home?
Oh, no. And like, there's some things where he's like, do you feel tired after a long day?
And so she stops answering questions about him and she goes, yes, I do. And she marks it off.
Do you have a good night's sleep?
What? Yeah, I should say. And then he's like, he's just so done with it. Like, he's okay. So what happens is we cut back and forth from her or them both being in the shop.
Do you find the idea of exchanging wives repulsive?
I find the question repulsive.
That was a good one. So he's like,
that was the one I was trying to remember. Thank you, Jen.
So all this time, you see Harold slowly manipulating this box that's in his lap. It's a small flat box. And he flips it open. It's beautiful. It's lined with blue velvet. And you start seeing him finger this gun, right? And then he turns and he points it to his mother over his shoulder. And he holds it there. And she's like too engrossed in like, does our culture talk about sex too much? And she's like, well, no, I should say so. And he's like wiggling the gun, kind of. He's like, I'm going to pull this freaking trigger at you, mom. And then it asks some asinine thing. And then he's like, no, it's not enough to just kill her. She's not the problem. I'm the problem. And so he turns the gun towards himself and she pays him no never mind.
Okay, so he aims the gun at himself.
Uh-huh.
Shoots himself in the head.
He sprawls backwards in this high back chair and his legs are up and his arms are splayed to the side and it's perfect.
And she says, Harold, please.
And then she goes, and then she just continues the survey. It's like, do you give yourself extreme highs and extreme lows?
She's like, oh, yes, that's definitely you, Harold.
And then we cut to
another funeral.
This one's outside. And she's like, so she's standing on one side behind some people. And he's standing right next to the reverend. Or I don't know what all of these robes mean, because we were going through a whole bunch of denominations. And she's like, across. Now, it's not just like her from the back trying to call to him a few rows ahead at the back of a funeral. This is across the gravesite itself in a sea of like 30 plus people. And she's like, and like the guy in front of her has this beard and he turns around and he glares at her real hard. And that's Cat Stevens. If you want to be you, be you. I'm like, okay, sorry. We'll sing it better later. But yeah, the reverend turns and looks at Harold, and Harold's like, I'm not doing anything wrong, and then realizes he's got these Elton John glasses on, and he takes off. He's like, no, I'm respectable. I don't know what you're talking about.
And then the funeral is like adjourned, and everybody walks away. Maud is the first to leave in this bright yellow umbrella.
Yes, which is important later on. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that you see, you see her walk out first. Now they have a procession of probably 10, 15 people in between them that you also see walk by. It's probably a minute or a minute and a half worth of a walk. And then you see Harold come by and he doesn't have an umbrella. He just has his collar kind of turned up on his long coat. Did you notice, though, that behind him was a lady with a white umbrella?
No.
So she had a yellow one that was like a certain kind of flower, and he had a white one behind him that he didn't know about that was a certain other kind of flower.
Oh, this is going to be important later on when we spoil it for you, listeners. And then the pastor catches up to Harold and asks him about Maud.
Yeah, did you know that woman from earlier? And like, she like took my car. I don't know if he says that specifically.
Yeah. Then Maud shows up with a hearse.
She pulls up in the hearse and is like, hey, Harold, it's good to see you.
And the pastor's like, hey, did you take my car?
No.
Was it the one with the St. Christopher medal on it? He's like, yeah. Oh, how did you like it? Oh, yeah, I did take that. Oh, how did you like it? I painted it. And he was like, The pastor did not like...
No, no. It's related to a cutscene from the film. At one point, a scene they decided not to film at all, she goes into a church and paints smiley faces on all the really dour-looking statues. Maybe that'd be a little too Joker-esque, but it's within the realm of her character, I think. Yeah. But so she's like, get in, Harold. And they just drive off and she is squealing like a windy cemetery road. And she's just like,
she's probably going like more than 35 miles an hour.
She's Mario. I'm trying to make Maud into Tokyo. Mario drifting like through this cemetery. She's like, this is amazing. It handles so smoothly. Have you ever driven a hearse? And he's like, yeah, actually. She's like, it's a new experience for me. She's like, you want me to drive you home, Harold?
He's like, this is my car.
She's like, what? Well, then you got to drive me home.
No, she goes, your hearse? And he replies with,
I don't know.
Yours.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. I hate that so much now that I didn't even remember it. I didn't even write it down. I looked it up. And yeah, your hearse?
Yours. It's like a dad joke.
Okay, can you explain it now? Why is it funny? Just because he used the word hearse?
No, it's yes and hearse. So he combines the two. And so his response is, instead of yes, it's yours.
Okay, but I'm missing the joke there. It's not like, is that your purse? I'm not like, your purse? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me.
It's a stupid joke.
If it was yes, hearsey Bob, I'd be like, sure, that's okay. It's a stretch, but you got there, right?
It's the equivalent of like a yarr from a pirate.
Yarf?
Yarp.
It's a combination.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that funny.
Okay, that's fine. You don't have to.
But if it becomes a running gag in my life, I will die 15 times.
In a yurse.
That's how they'll deliver my body. When you fake your death, they deliver you to the graveyard in a yurse.
Okay, so I wanted to point out there's this Maud says, "Will you drive me home?" And so he gets out on his side and he goes around to the driver's side.
And he opens her door for her.
He goes to open his door and it automatically cuts to him opening the door for Maud in front of her house. And I was like, that's just brilliant. That's brilliant cinematography.
There are so many beautiful scenes and cuts in this film that I couldn't find a single one where I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Not a single one.
Yeah.
Nope. I wrote down everybody else except for the guy who was in charge of cinematography. Oh, well, we'll just thank Hal Ashby for his directorial genius. Oh, okay. So because I'll forget later on.
Bud. Bud.
It was in Butt Cork. Oh, my God. Bud, when the film was finished completing to be edited, the production company was like, okay, so we'll just take over the editing now. And he was like, no, Ashby was supposed to do it. And they're like, no, we're going to do it. We're going to edit this so we can make some money off of it. And he's like, I'm not doing the press circuit if you don't let him edit it. And they were like, what do you mean you're not going to promote the film? You're like our young hot guy. Nobody's going to go see the film with only the old lady's like, and then I shook his bones. Like, nobody's going to go see that. We need the hot young guy to go around and be like, I totally wanted to shook her bones. Anyways, yeah. he's the reason the movie is so good.
Good.
It did not do well by even reviews standards at the time, not just by monetary, how many people went to see it in theaters, but the reviews of it at the time were pretty bad. And they had mentioned that it was partially due to uneven editing, but it's more accepted now in this generation. I mean, it feels at the right pace for a modern movie, whereas back then it felt too fast. There's not enough lead in between scene transitions.
But you don't need, this is the thing about this film, is that they give you room within the scene to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need that for the jump. Like, yeah, okay, she's like, you need to get help. He's in therapy now, right? And within therapy, like, the therapist gives a long speech and then, like, Harold will pause to respond. And in that pause, we as an audience can be like, oh, I guess he's really thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to having to have like this establishing shot of him walking through the woods where we're like, oh, I guess he has to think about it.
Yeah. Despite the fact that if anybody feels like this movie is just a little bit more fast paced, I can understand any criticisms of that. But I still feel like the pacing isn't like so disjointed. Like it's like, you know, when you go out for a brisk walk and that's your goal is to have a brisk walk. that's what this film feels like. It's like it's throughout the entire thing, you get the same tone, you get the same pacing. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't feel super disjointed.
There's also a real lack of establishing shots in this. And that I think that's one of the things I was mentioning to you, Naomi, is that there's no like pan from the outer city into a building, into the house, or into the,
like, you know, in The Shining, where it's like, wow, wow.
Exactly.
Wow, wow. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah. Anytime you're in a scene, you're immediately with the characters.
Mm-hmm. I did write down, I think it's James Cain was the set dresser. Which is important because, like, all of the scenes are gorgeous, mm-hmm. right? Because I want to say that specifically because now we're in front of Maud's house, which is a train car.
And it is cluttered. It has so much stuff in it.
She's walking in and he admonishes her at the front door. He's like, why do you keep taking people's cars? And she's like, I just remind people that stuff is stuff. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, now that hasn't stopped me from collecting a few things, mm-hmm. but that is incidental and not integral.
Later on, she talks about how consistency is not a human trait. So this is totally in line with her philosophy.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Both the outside and the inside of her home are very reflective of her. Like, she's got a lot of collections, but the fact that it's a train and she just keeps moving throughout life.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And she loads, she's like, birds are the only animals I get to see anymore, implying that she's gone on these great adventures to see these grand animals. But she loads a pigeon launcher with birdseed and then pulls this lever and it just flings birdseed and then she just continues on. Oh, this is inside the house. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she offers him some oat straw tea, which he declines because he has. Oh, and she's explaining the art in her home, right?
No, that's later. That's later. She's just talking about the collections of things.
Birdseed might be later too.
Yeah.
She does offer him oat straw tea though, and he declines.
No, I think the bird scene is this one because she talks about going into pet shops to liberate canaries, but she was before her time.
Yes, yeah. And then she realized that the zoos are full, the prisons are overcrowded and overflowing, and
yeah.
She drops bombs like that all the time.
Yeah.
All she says is really like super woke stuff, like the entire film. And that might be a flaw with her for me, but I mean, she's lived this really large life.
It seems to me that Maud likes to drop a lot of like philosophical statements.
This has got to be the scene where she talks about art, though, because this is where I make my note about the Rape of Rome, which to our audience out of context sounds real bad.
No, that's after Harold stops by. Well, and we meet Glasgow, Gloucestershire.
No. My notes go naked swan painting, oat straw tea that he doesn't drink, more therapy, same outfit, and then ice cream date.
Well, what I have is it goes from like, you know, yeah, she asked him to stay for the tea and he's like, I can't, I have an appointment. Oh, she's like, the dentist? And he's like, kind of. And that's when he goes to the therapist and he's just laying on the bed and the therapist is like, you know, do you have any friends, Harold?
No. Well, maybe one. Would you like to talk about that? No. Like, he's mad. He's like, no.
Yeah.
Because it's so new. He doesn't want to. And so then the therapist is like, oh, you know, your mother tells me. And then I was like, oh, his mother talks to his therapist? He says, your mother tells me that she set up some dates for you. And he goes, how do you feel about that? And then I didn't recognize this when I watched it just now. But like when I watched it just now with you. You had the subtitles on, which is great. And it goes, snoring. The noise he made, I just didn't recognize it. I thought it was a noise of displeasure, which it technically is. But he's like, because he's laying down on the couch. And then we cut to the
You mom. Had made a comment also about his uneven makeup in that scene.
Oh,
right?
God. Okay, so on Reddit, I follow bad professional makeup artists, like people just posting like bad foundation. And so now I have this terrible habit of checking your jawline and your blend into your hair, which you should always do. Like, your boob cleavage should be the same color as your neck to face cleavage. Like, just get that on point. And his neck is red and his ear is red, but his face is pale.
Yeah.
And it's pretty funny. But ironically, if I'm embarrassed, that's exactly what happens. My ears get red and my neck gets red. But, you know, so the therapist asks about the dates and it cuts to walking through a sitting room, the mom and this date.
Maud Madness is underway, applauder. And we still have two more in-depth sessions to cover the entirety of this romantic black comedy. So if you want to freak out, freak out. Hey. This is your audio engineer and non-age discriminatory lover of all young hearts, Jen. wishing you a celebratory start to springtime. If you've been looking for love in all the wrong graveyards, Shocked and Applaud is here to help remind you that the best reviews of dark cinema can be found right here in your favorite podcasting app. Dying to be a part of our never-ending adoration for cult films and classic storytelling? Why not tag us or message us on Facebook using @ShockedAndApplaud or Twitter using @ShockedApplaud? We've got a back catalog of reviews ready for any road trip, and we really appreciate your help spreading the word. We'll be back with more Harold and Maude next week in part two of our review. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.